Okay, let's just dive straight into it. Ever look around and think, why is the government paying for that?
Right, or why tax this so much?
Yeah, exactly. Shouldn't the market just sort it all out? If you're trying to get a quick handle on why governments actually step into markets, maybe for work or, you know, just out of curiosity, this is the place.
Absolutely. We're doing a deep dive today into exactly that, the core reasons governments intervene. We've got some pretty solid source material to guide us.
And our mission really is to cut through the jargon, figure out why that pure free market idea sometimes, well, falls short.
And look at the specific tools the source mentions governments use to kind of nudge things along.
We'll hit three main areas our source digs into. First, public goods stuff the market might not provide at all.
Then goods that society maybe consumes too much or too little of. Think externalities.
And finally, the interesting, sometimes controversial ways they try to control prices.
So let's kick things off with the big picture idea. Market failure. What are we actually talking about here?
Good question. Fundamentally, it's just the idea that the free market, you know, left totally alone, doesn't always use resources in the, let's say, most efficient way.
Or maybe not in a way that society thinks is fair or best overall.
And this, according to our source, is the main justification for government getting involved. Not to replace market everywhere, but...
But to step in specific cases, to try and, well, fix things.
Yeah.
Improve social welfare where the market seems to miss the mark.
Okay, that makes sense. So, first big reason from the source. Dealing with things the market just doesn't provide. These public goods.
Yeah, public goods, classic economics concept. The source points out two key features. They're non-excludable.
Meaning you can't easily stop anyone from using them, even if they don't pay.
Right, and they're non-rivalrous.
So one person using it doesn't stop someone else. Like a breathing air, almost, or maybe street lighting.
Exactly. Street lighting is a good one. Or think national defense. How do you charge individual people for national security? How does one ship using a lighthouse stop another?
You can't, really. It's impractical.
And that leads straight to what the source calls the free rider problem.
Ah, yes. People can benefit without chipping in.
Precisely. So why would a private company provide it? There's little, if any, profit motive. They just can't make money from it reliably.
Which means the market just fails. A missing market, like the source says.
The good or service just wouldn't exist if we relied only on private firms.
So the government steps in. What's the typical solution according to the source?
Direct provision, usually, funded by taxes.
Like the government paying for the military or funding fire departments or installing those streetlights.
Exactly.
And why should you care? Well, these are often essential services, right? Things that provide security, safety, basic infrastructure for everyone. It promotes a kind of fairness.
Ensures everyone gets the benefit, regardless of whether they could or would pay for that specific thing individually.
Okay, good. Let's shift to the second big area. Goods where the market does provide them, but maybe not at the right level from society's view. Too much or too little consumption. This involves externalities.
Externalities, yes. Those unintended consequences, the side effects of making or using something that affect people who weren't part of the original transaction.
And the key is, the market price doesn't reflect these spillover costs or benefits.
Exactly right. The cost or benefit to the individual doing the consuming or producing is different from the total cost or benefit to society.
Okay, so let's break that down. First, the source mentions merit goods, things we apparently don't consume enough of.
That's the idea. They have positive externalities benefits that spill over to others, to society as a whole.
Like education. Or vaccinations, maybe healthcare in general.
Perfect examples. Your education helps the whole economy, right? Getting a vaccine helps protect the community through herd immunity. It's not just about you.
So why are they underconsumed then, if they're so good?
Well, the source suggests a couple of reasons. One is information failure. People might not fully grasp the long-term personal benefits, let alone the social ones.
Or they just can't afford them, especially lower-income folks.
That too.
Yeah.
So the government intervenes. The source points to things like subsidies, making them cheaper.
Like student loans or grants.
Could be. Or providing the service directly, maybe for free, like public schools or certain health services.
And information campaigns, too. Telling people why it's good for them.
Yep, encouraging consumption that way. Now, flip side, demerit goods.
The stuff society thinks we consume too much of. Because they have negative externalities, costs that spill over.
Exactly, costs imposed on others. Think tobacco, excessive alcohol consumption, maybe gambling, recreational drugs.
The costs could be things like, what, higher healthcare spending for everyone or public nuisance issues.
Precisely. And why the overconsumption? The source mentions things like addiction, maybe consumers not fully understanding the risks or long-term harm.
Or just focusing on the short-term enjoyment, perhaps?
Could be. So here, the government wants to reduce consumption.
How? Taxes seem like the obvious one.
Yep, indirect taxes. Making cigarettes and alcohol more expensive is a common strategy mentioned.
What else? Regulations? Bans?
Right. Age restrictions, banning smoking in public places, those sorts of things. And again, public health campaigns warning about the dangers.
You can really see how this stuff impacts daily life.
Yeah.
Healthcare costs, public safety, the rules you follow, it connects back to managing these externalities.
Definitely. Okay, third main reason for intervention, according to the source. Controlling prices directly.
So not just nudging consumption, but actually setting price limits. Why?
Sometimes the market price, left alone, is seen as just too high or too low or maybe too volatile, leading to outcomes society doesn't like. So price controls.
Right. The source talks about two types. First, maximum prices, price ceilings.
Yes, a legal limit set below the natural market equilibrium price.
And the goal is usually affordability.
Primarily, yes. To make essential goods or services more affordable, especially for lower-income households. The source gives examples.
Like rent controls, or maybe caps on energy bills, or basic food prices sometimes.
Exactly. Reasons cited include keeping necessities within reach, preventing potential exploitation by, say, monopolies, and reducing relative poverty.
But these can cause problems, can't they? The source points that out.
Oh, definitely. If you hold the price down artificially low, what happens?
Yeah.
Demand shoots up, but suppliers have less incentive to produce.
Leading to shortages.
Shortages are a big one. And
yeah.
That can create black markets where the goods are sold illegally at higher prices.
And quality might suffer too. Suppliers cutting corners, long waits for consumers.
All potential issues highlighted in the source material, yes. Now the other type is a minimum price, a price floor.
So this is a legal limit set above the natural market price.
Correct. The purpose here is often the opposite, either to protect producers by guaranteeing them a certain income.
Like minimum wages for workers.
Right.
Or supports for farmers.
Those are key examples, yes. Or sometimes it's used on demerit goods to discourage consumption by making them artificially expensive. Think minimum alcohol pricing.
Okay, so the reasons are like guaranteeing a baseline income for producers, stopping prices from falling too low, or discouraging consumption of harmful things.
Right. But again, the source warns about potential downsides.
If the price is forced up, suppliers want to produce more, but consumers want to buy less.
Exactly. Leading to surpluses. Too much supply, not enough demand at that high price.
Like those stories of milk being dumped or grain sitting in silos.
That kind of thing. Which means storage costs, potential waste, and the government might even have to step in and buy the surplus, which costs taxpayers money.
Plus, consumers just end up paying higher prices than they would have otherwise.
Absolutely, it's a trade-off.
Okay, so just to recap quickly, the source material suggests governments intervene for these key reasons. Ensuring public goods get provided.
Influencing how much we consume of merit and demerit goods because of their wider social impacts.
And directly controlling prices to address issues like affordability or producer income, or sometimes discouraging harmful consumption.
And the overarching goal described in the source is always about trying to correct these perceived market failures, aiming for an outcome that's, well, better for society as a whole than what the pure market might deliver on its own.
Right. We've covered those main areas. Public goods the market won't touch, nudging consumption patterns for things with those spillover effects, and using price ceilings or floors.
And it all comes back to this idea of social welfare, looking beyond just the buyer and seller to the wider community impact.
But as we saw, especially with price controls, interventions, even with really good intentions like making rent affordable or ensuring farmers get a decent price, they can backfire, right?
They certainly can. Shortages, surpluses, quality issues, illegal markets. These are real potential consequences the source highlights.
Which leaves us with a pretty tricky question, kind of implied by the source's discussion, given that stepping in can create these other complex problems.
Problems that might be just as bad or worse than the original market failure sometimes.
How do we actually weigh that? How do we balance the intended good of an intervention against the very real possibility of unintended, maybe negative consequences?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? How to get that balance right?
Definitely something to think about as you see these economic forces and government actions playing out all around you.